Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, Matt Neely behind the glass, as always, keeping me on time and on target. The Morning Voice, 5 days a week, five different hosts, five different topic areas, a little bit of politics, some a little bit more in some, a little bit less in others, but always an opportunity for you to hear about your local community, what's going on, who's engaged, who's involved, and hopefully make your drive time, if you are on the road, a little less painful. So far, it looks like the roads are pretty good out there, so we hope everybody keeps it nice and speed nice and easy and safe, because we don't need any more traffic accidents in our region. We are a nation bound by shared values of freedom, liberty, and equality, and with that comes some rights and responsibilities. For some, that includes service to our country and our community, and the purpose of this show is to try to get you engaged and involved in some manner. Appreciate you being with us and listening to us. Matt, I hope you had a great weekend, as always.
Indeed, it was wonderful. I'm looking forward to a holiday weekend coming up right next.
Well, it's kind of become a tradition in the last several weeks, is we've got a football team that continues to be on a roll.
Isn't it? Can you believe this, Ted?
I mean, I can't.
Who would have expected an 8-win season? They got one more regular season game to play. You know, the bowl game, that's later, but they've got eight. They're sitting on 8 wins.
They're sitting on 8 wins. Only one game left. Probably the most important game of the year
for a lot of fans.
It's going to be up at Sun Devil Stadium. This weekend on Friday, actually.
Seven o'clock, I believe.
It's a 7 o'clock late game. So I hope some folks are going up there. I know we're going to have a big group of a gathering at our house to watch the game. And if they end up 9-3, I mean, the over-under in Vegas, I believe, was 4.5 games at the start of the year. 4.5.
Yeah.
And they've doubled it. You know, for all the criticism you've heard last year on Brennan and the team and coming together, and, I mean, they're doing it right, whether it's the changes in the coordinators. But, I mean, that game against Baylor, the first half there was, like, no defense. It was just teams back and forth, 17-14 at half, Baylor's winning. Whatever they had to drink, or whatever they had to rehydrate, or whatever the coaches said to them,
or whatever adjustments they made, probably.
Well, that's what it really comes down to.
They're saying Danny Gonzalez is really good with that, and Daigie too. So I mean, I think the coordinators have made the difference, and I think the team, you know, have growing together for a year also made a difference. And a few takeaways. I mean, first of all. Probably the best football weather I have attended at a game.
It was gorgeous.
Forever.
It was absolutely incredible.
It was cool. Yeah. When the breeze kicked in the shade, it could get a little chilly, but not bad. But in the sun, you couldn't have asked for a better day. Okay. This is the first, and I feel bad for all the people that didn't go to the game because you guys missed a gem. And, you know, you had El Tour de Tucson running at the same time, so that probably impacted attendance. But I feel sorry for the people that didn't go, because you missed a really fun game. And then, oh my gosh, Ted, I saw, in 40 years, I haven't seen the Power I run, right? And they ran it like 3 or 4 times. You know, they ran it at the goal line a couple times, and they ran it one other time. And I'm like, I'm looking down, I'm like, are they running the Power I, for crying out loud?
They were,
and it worked. You know,
it's like you said, the adjustments, what the coaches saw, what they needed to do, what they saw on the tape. It was just amazing. And that run in the second half, I mean, that run of plays, you know, the back to back touchdown,
the scoring torrent.
interception from the team. It was that's the way to describe it. A scoring torrent. It went crazy.
3 touchdowns in a little over 4 minutes, just about 4 minutes of elapsed time on the clock.
But it also kicked off something else.
Yes.
It kicked off something I've never seen in a long time in Arizona Stadium. And
they've been doing it for the last couple games.
I know, but it's never gotten more than about 20, 25 people. You know, it's never gotten big.
The shirtless section.
Now I'm going to give a little credit where it's credit due. This was started October 11th, 20 of this year at an Oklahoma State game.
Yep.
A guy named Trent Eaton was dared by his sister. Actually, he was offered $10 if he'd do it, to take off his shirt and wave it in an empty section of the stadium to lighten the mood, because Oklahoma State was getting pounded.
They've had a rough season, yes.
They were getting pounded. Well, it turned into, it went viral when he did it. Other fans saw him and joined in, and it became something that's been now kind of going on. There's been some, like you said, they've been doing it up in the upper section, but it's mostly been kids and younger people. It became like the anthill just was released. And the estimate's close to 1,000. I mean, they filled almost
201, 202.
Two-thirds. Yeah. Yeah, 201 and 202. Almost two-thirds of 201 and almost a third of 202. Yeah. And it was just nonstop people going up there.
You saw the student section, and they were all running towards the tunnels at their level.
Absolutely.
And then, moments later, you just saw this steady stream of people coming out the tunnels upstairs, right?
Yeah. And just watching the northeast stairwell, there they were going up, and some of them were taking their shirts on the way up. Some were waiting until they got up there, but people had to move out of their seats where they were sitting because the overflow of shirtless bodies standing up there just kept moving down. That was amazing. I kept looking up in the Sands clubs to see if they were taking it on there. I didn't see any shirts coming off up there though, but the sky boxes looked pretty clean as well. It's just, if you wanted to take your shirt off, it was in that section, but it was just a game that summarized the season.
Yeah, but the thing I like about it, it's just that kind of organic fan joy. You know what I mean? And Brendan commented after the game. He says, "Look, we saw it. You know, thanks. It lightens our mood too. It pumps us up too.
The thing is, the fans stayed.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a blowout. People could have been the usual, you know, a 10 o'clock departure. But the fans who were there, and like you said, it wasn't the strongest turnout for what you'd expect on for an 8-3 team.
I would guess 35 grand. I mean, 35,000 people. I think they reported 40 or 41. If there were more than 35,000 people that actually showed up for the game, I'd be surprised. But you know what? Here's the deal: when the team makes key plays, they're engaged. They light up, and I've seen this at more than one game. So the stands may not be full, but when the team does something or needs some help from the fans, I'm telling you, they're vocal and they're loud.
They're loud.
Make, you know, and
the people are there to watch a football game. And there were a lot of interviews. It wasn't just Brendan, Brendan afterwards. There were a lot of players that were getting interviewed going, listen, we feed off that. When you get fired up, we get fired up. I mean, the turnover, sword, you know, and with the balls, they run to the student section. The student section just all of a sudden like, does like a morph pushing down towards the front, and then they all get back to a little bit more space when they move back up. It was loud. It was great. People were excited. It's been a great year for Arizona football. Nobody saw this coming. It's been incredible.
I just love it when it's just a pleasant surprise like that. And so obviously, you know, they're going to go to a hostile stadium on Friday, and you get the risk of the turkey, the tryptophan hangover and all that stuff. So you run the risk of all that, but hey, let's go. Let's have a great game up in Tempe and bring home that. And both teams are 8-3. I think the Sun Devils, I put it in the news yesterday, the Sun Devils are running a 3-game win streak. The Cats are running a 4-game win streak. So yeah.
And it's, and if you look back on how many years it's been since both these teams were 8-3 or better coming into a game, it's been, I want to say it was 2016, 2004.
It's been a minute, right?
It's been a minute. Say, yeah. They go up, they go down, but it's going to be a big game. It should be a great game. I hope the Cats can pull it off, because 9-3 and going to a bowl game, this has been a good year.
Indeed.
This has been a good year. I won't say that old famous line, you know, if win or lose, this has been a good year. No, we want to win.
We saw the return of the power eye, Ted, the eye formation.
You're ready to go.
We're going back to the 70s and 80s. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, incredible. And speaking of a good year, this will be a good show. So we've got Kim Adair joining us at the bottom of the hour to talk about the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl, presented by Gin and Juice by Dre and Snoop for the full title, but she'll, I'm sure, repeat that a couple times throughout her stay. But it's going to be another big year for that bowl game and a lot to do a lot for the community. So we'll hear from her. And then the second hour, we're going to bring in Jaime Molera with Molera Alvarez. He's our political consultant that brings us up to speed on things that are going up at the state. There's definitely a lot of things going up at the state level now as they anticipate going into a election year session and into elections. So there's a lot. He's going to update us on all the names he's hearing about. I've heard there is another candidate that has jumped into the AG's race. So you've got Chris Mays.
Okay.
He's going to inform us another candidate that's running with in the Republican side with Warren Peterson and Rodney Glassman.
Interesting.
So he's going to give us an update on that. But when we come back from this break, Matt, I think we should take a dive into today's opinion page in the Arizona Daily Star.
Please.
Several interesting articles and a lot to talk about there. So you're listening to 1030 Your Voice, your trusted local news and talk. Stay with us through the break and we'll see you. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely always bringing up a little Tom Petty to get us going and moving in the morning. And so that's always great. So, Matt, I want to switch a conversation a little bit to the Daily Star. First off, I'm a big supporter of the Daily Star. I read it every day. It's part of my, I look at it as part of my job responsibilities at the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. And if I'm going to engage in public policy, I need to know what's being printed and what's being said. And that leads us to the page I want to talk today, because while a lot of people think you go to the opinion page and the letters to the editor, and you hear people from the extremes writing in the letters. And mostly it's true. That's true. There's a lot of folks who will go in there and bash Donald Trump and the president throughout. And then you've got folks on the other side who will give the counter argument and it's back and forth. But sometimes you can find nuggets in there that are going to tell you really how the citizenry's thinking. And as we approach election season, as we've got the Regional Transportation Authority, I'm going to be watching that page closely to see what they said about that as we go into March. But the opinion side of the sheet prior to the letters for the editors really had some choice ones this morning, Matt.
Okay.
Three articles, and I'll hit on all three of them because in our time here, and we may not get to them. I think we'll get through the first two. But the one I really want to bring up is one called Why Pima County Must Hit the Brakes on Project Blue. Project Blue, the project
the one that Pima County approved?
That just keeps on giving. I mean, this story will not go away, and it's not going to go away. That's what people are missing. Data centers, there's a reason we need data centers locally. Mm-hmm. There's a reason we need data centers located in the United States. I've mm-hmm. heard people talk about we should put them in space. Really, we want to take the fight and the wars to space right okay. now? There's no guarantee. This is about, there is a security thing, but that's a whole other issue. That's mm-hmm. not what I want to get to. On this one, this Tucson opinion piece was written by Andres Cano.
Okay.
He
represents Pima County Supervisor.
Pima County Supervisor mm-hmm. representing District 5, mm-hmm. which he was appointed to.
Yep.
He was working for the city. And before that, he was a state legislator. And Andres is an open elected official. He'll talk. He'll meet with anybody. But this article, mm-hmm. it basically said that they need to start all over with the negotiations.
Okay.
Now, let's go back on the history. The county voted 3-2.
Yeah.
And yes, Andres was in the minority on that one.
Sure.
So 3-2 to sell the land to Beale Industries for creation to be incorporated into the city of Tucson and become a site for a data center.
Yep.
It was a multi-million dollar sale.
Mm-hmm.
The whole data center itself is $3.6 billion. There was $100 million that was going to be given to the city, or not given to the city, but the $100 million that they were going to build 18 miles of purple pipe, because what we've got a lot of reclaimed water, and most of it we send down the Santa Cruz, we send it down some of the rivers to get back into the ground, and that in some way does, but it's not the most efficient way of revitalizing our water. The best way to use reclaimed water is find uses for it that we're now currently using potable water or mm-hmm. drinkable water.
Sure.
That's the best way to do it. Well, 18 miles of pipe would have a huge difference, but as we all know, Project Blue fired up what I will call the vocal, I don't know if I'd say it's the minority, but a very vocal segment of our society.
Of course.
Some of it coming in from out of state at some of these meetings, and people are going to go, oh, you're just naysay. No, that was a fact.
A bunch of
acknowledged it. People there acknowledged, oh, we came in from Texas. This is important.
Yeah.
And if you look at the sidebar, if you look at the all the banter and all the arguments against data centers throughout the country, they're all coordinated. They are all coordinated. It's all the same arguments, all the same discussions, all the same
protests are so coordinated. It's not being, organic just to Tucson.
Exactly. Yeah. It's being coordinated, and you know, we could go down a bunch of rabbit holes on where that that is coming from. You know, is it in our country? Is it our country? But that's not the point of this one. They agreed to a sale to Beal.
Right.
And it wasn't a cheap sale. They were making money off it. But now Andres is saying we should start all over.
Of course.
Because that sale, in his mind, was only if it got annexed into the city. Well, we know the city eventually voted 7-0 against it, mm-hmm. which I can guarantee you when the county approved that, it wasn't a 7-0 vote. Mm-hmm. That is something mm-hmm. that changed. Mm-hmm. Changed when they were getting beat on. They listened to the loudest. And we don't want to go back to those public meetings they had, which were just screaming yell-a-thons. They were a crock. Mm-hmm. Nobody understands what the First Amendment really is, and it's not that, and that's how it was held. But now what he's looking at and what he implies in here, this is the scary part to me. He says, when Tucson was part of the plan, city residents stood to gain reclaimed water pipeline valued at more than $100 million. So Beal was going to give $100 million into a community project. Mm-hmm. But their latest proposal offered to Pima County, remember, they've mm-hmm. already agreed to the sale.
It's a done deal.
They've already agreed to the sale. But their latest proposal gives residents just $15 million in community investment.
Right.
Only $5 million of that up front. Right. He said roughly 0.14% of the entire project's value. He said that's the equivalent of tipping 15 right. cents on a 100 meal.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is the county has to be tipped to do yeah. business with?
That's amazing.
The county services also need to be tipped?
Hey, aside to Supervisor Cano, if you're going to play the Mordita game, you get that arranged before. Not after. Once it's a done deal, it's a done deal. So if we're going to play the Mordita game, you do it before, not after. So there's a little friendly advice to the supervisor on that one. The second one is, you know, let's talk about the $100 million Mordita that the city was going to get. Because once the city said no, all of a sudden, Beal immediately, within 6 weeks, says, hey, we're gonna go with the closed loop system, which probably they wanted to do to begin with, but the city said, hey, if you'll do a favor for us, we'll approve this deal for you. Yeah, and you can use vast amounts of water, right? And so, yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of, but the city did that deal before, not after. So there's a little lesson.
And that's the challenge that we've got here. You don't sign something, you don't agree to something, you don't vote for something. I know he was on the no side.
And you're on the losing end of the vote.
But the sale's done. We are being watched, whether people realize this or not. The business community, groups like SLC have said time and time and time again, we are not a business-friendly city. Now, I'll be honest, there's no politicians that's going to tell you they're not business-friendly. There's no politicians that's going to not tell you they support education. There's right. no politician. They will say the things they need, because if they say they are anti-business or they say they are anti-education, they're never getting elected.
Sure.
It's not going to happen. But it's the actions that we have to watch. But we are being watched. And that's why this one is being pushed. Now there's a deadline. It's referenced in here that's coming up. It's got to be done by the end of the year or they may walk. But they aren't, what they're not mentioning is they may sue, because they'd have every right to sue.
Right.
They'd have every right to come back. You had a signed agreement done.
Right.
In that language, there was nothing saying it had to be with the city of Tucson. And now they've found a way that's not going to use as much water
sure.
because they're no longer obligated on that pipeline investment and
yeah.
use reclaimed water. Was that the plan all along? I don't know. We'll do it. I've got a couple leads on some folks from Beal. Hopefully
Good.
We'll have them.
I cannot wait till that happens. I'm really looking forward to it.
And I know what question you'll be asking.
Yeah, sure. I want to discuss the process of how they went with a closed loop versus an open loop cooling system. You know, my cards are on the table. Hey, you know, this has been going on I've brought this up so many times on this station. 1970, Motorola wanted to build a plant here to build what was then called integrated circuits, or, you know, whatever they were originally called. That would have employed 5,000 people. That would have been what we're up to, 55 years of, you know, of good paying jobs with benefits. Okay. 2.5 generations, 2¾ generations of people, bettering their lives, tax revenues being generated, money swirling around in our economy. Those 5,000, they built the plant when Pima County, a planning commission said no. And everybody thought, oh, well, they'll just appeal it to the board and the three-member board will approve it. Well, Motorola said, are you kidding me? We're the deal's off. We're walking. Oh, no, you can appeal it. No. You guys don't get it. You guys don't want us. The guy said, the head of Motorola says, we're not going to go where we're not wanted. They went to Austin. That plant is still in operation today. And they've been, and look at what Austin said. And we want to be Austin? Well, we blew one chance.
That's the scary part about it. When the map dashboard, which has now been around, I think coming up on 10 years now, when the map dashboard was put in place and we went out and asked the community, what are our peer cities? Yeah. And who do we strive to be? Austin was one of the biggest ones that were on the list. And we're going, I'm going, well, we're never going to be in Austin now. It's kind of like saying we're going to be a San Diego. Yeah. Yes, let's measure ourselves against them. Let's measure some of the things that are measurable so we can see where we rack and stack. But we had the opportunity to be Austin.
I'm telling you, we had the, that's exactly, we never get opportunities. Well, you did. You said no. And now the no growthers won in 1970, just like the no growthers continue to win and run the city now. And, there you go.
And the challenge, the big challenge we have, and I think you're going to see some things moving in this data center front, because there's other communities in that are now being considered.
Marana.
Marana's got a couple suitors that are looking to put there. The DM Air Force Base is on the list of sites to put data centers that, and they don't need, guess what? They don't need any approval.
Right.
So this isn't going away. This isn't going to change. We missed our chance to be Austin. I don't know what city will benefit from us if we turn all this way, but we can't do it again and again and again. That's why we have our poverty issues. That's why we have our unemployment issues. We need to realize jobs and opportunity make a difference in a community.
That's right.
All right. Well, when we come back, we'll be joined by Kim Adair, the chief executive officer for, I think it's chief executive officer. I like that. It sounds, makes her sound right there at the top, what she is, of the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl presented by Gin and Juice by Dre and Snoop. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell, your host. Matt, that was a great segment. Appreciated all the banter as always. And you saw how far we made it into that opinion page. Three articles I was going to talk about, and we covered one.
That
just says something about the, I really believe, again, shout out to the Arizona Daily Star. I know they're trucking the papers down from Las Vegas now. They've got a whole bunch of challenges. But if you want to get the local news and you want to know what folks here locally are saying, you really need to read. At least sure. Go to the local section. Tim Steller's actually, I'm going to pay him a compliment, he's actually doing more reporting than he has on historically on some articles. Obviously, I don't agree with everything he said. There was a great article by Tony Davis over the weekend about an interview with Ted Cook, who we had last week. Oh. And I've got some things I'll update you on at the top of the hour on what the WIFA folks decide to spend their money on and what impact it could have to Arizona. So there's a lot of good nuggets out of there. It's, small local papers. They struggle. I view it on my phone electronically, and then I print out any articles like I do to come in here. So give the Arizona Daily Star another chance. Take a look. You've got Tucson Sentinel and that area, that'll break it. There's a lot of good articles out there. And if somebody's got, we maybe need a strong conservative paper out there too. We don't have any of those in this region, but I'm not sure our population always requires that.
Give me middle of the road balls and strikes. That's all I ask.
Yeah. You're asking for old school media, Matt. That left years ago with the invention of the internet, I think, or the 24-hour TV cycle. So let's get on to something that we can talk about in a positive manner. Talk about getting engaged and involved in the community. If it wasn't for our next guest, the Arizona Bowl would not be what it is today. So I'm honored to have Kim Adair. And is it the CEO?
Executive director.
Yeah. I thought I had that same wrong. Difference. I'm on your board. You think I would have known. But the bottom line is you are the something in charge. You're the big kahuna. So that's a thing, and you've been making it work. Let's talk real quickly, because a lot of has been made out of the kickoff luncheon. So the annual kickoff luncheon, almost a little over 900, almost 900 folks. It was packed down at the TCC. And you've become kind of known for your interviews that you do with the guest, the big name we've drawn in from Gronk when you had him on. And this time it was Brian Urlacher. And a lot of people don't know Brian Urlacher's connectivity. You know, obviously Hall of Fame linebacker with the Chicago Bears, played in the in Arizona Stadium is one of his bowl games, and he's cut still. He's in shape. He's looking great. And then you get him on stage and decide you're going to introduce him to the salsa challenge.
Yes.
Who came up with that idea?
I have to say I did. Because, you know, one of my character traits is that I'm always worried about complacency. And I'm always worried that I'm going to put on a party and no one's going to show up because they've seen it, heard it before. And so I was hoping to try to do something new for our guests at the kickoff luncheon. And so about 10 days before the kickoff luncheon, I had this idea about sort of spoofing Hot Ones, which is the buffalo wings that people
exactly.
eat, and they eat 10 of them and they get increasingly hotter. And it's so fun to watch those interviews because you see this the celebrity that's being
the
interviewed,
sweat
the
coming
sweat
down.
And yeah. the just the pain of that heat. And so I thought it would be fun to do something similar, but with a Tucson twist and have increasingly hot salsa. And our friends at El Charo and Ray Flores over there, like, totally took care of me. And I said, listen, I want to be crying at the end of this. So make sure the last one's really, really hot. And so I didn't know until that day what that looked like. And then they showed me the Scoville rating for each of them. But Brian Urlacher was such a great sport, played along. I gave him a lifeline. If he didn't want to do, you know, the last one, he could bring in Ollie Farhang to do it for him. And that last salsa was 1.5 million Scoville units, heat units, and it was hot.
It was actually fun because in between trying that, like the interview process, you'd ask and you'd talk to Brian about football. I think the first two,
easy.
Three, maybe it wasn't, but when you hit four and five, you both really had a hard time keeping focused. I think he went to the milk. he took the milk, and he did call the lifeline up, right?
He did.
But I think he may have tasted it anyway. I can't remember if he did or not, but Ollie did come up and toughed it out.
Well, tell you, between three and four, he saw himself in the monitor, and he saw that he was sweating through his shirt.
Through his shirt. Yeah.
And he made a joke about it to him, you know, at his about it, himself being, you know, so hot that he's sweating through his shirt. It was really, really funny. It was such a good sport. And then I mean, I was there drinking my gin and juice. I knew that if I had my gin and juice in my hand,
that is
it'd
one,
be okay.
Hey, that is one thing. This sponsorship has changed. It's made day drinking a lot more acceptable around the Arizona Bowl.
It's
apparently.
Part of my job.
It's part of your job. That's right. You have to support it. You got no choice. It's not that you want to. You just have to.
You know, I'm so fortunate that's actually a drink that I really, really enjoy. Yep. God help us if it was like something that was disgusting and I would have to pretend to like it.
Are you an IPA drinker?
Not really.
Okay, so no. If it was heavy IPAs, then you'd be in trouble. But it's not. It's
I have
gin
a
and
face
juice.
When I drink a heavy IPA. You don't want to see that. My husband laughs every time.
So kickoff luncheon, that's just the kickoff. That's just the start. Do we know the teams? When will we know the teams?
So we don't know the teams. There's a lot of things happening in both conferences right now. We'll decide and announce the teams on December 7th at our Selection Sunday event, which we're holding at Union Public House. And there's some great teams that we're looking at. I mean, I think on the Mountain West side, I think we're looking at Boise State, Fresno State, UNLV, and New Mexico, probably those four. And on the MAC side, boy, the MAC, they just beat each other up. I mean, up until like 2 weeks ago, no one was bowl eligible. Now they have a slate. But yeah, we got Western Michigan, Central Michigan, Ohio. Our friends Miami that came last year, their athletic director texts me about every other day saying we'd love to come back.
Well, the truth is, everything we've had an experience, I mean, our bowl is kind of unique. We're not affiliated with the ESPN bowls, where there's a lot of things. We kind of have our own gig, and that's why we've been one of the first to be lot streamed on the internet. There's been a lot of firsts. But one thing that we're always about is making sure these kids, and they're still kids, they're big kids, but yeah. they're kids, have a great experience.
Exactly.
And we've exposed them to all sorts of different things. And you find that happens quite a bit. Schools want to come back. They
every
want
year.
To be part of it.
Yes. Miami, who was here last year, is saying, hey, everybody heard about it last year. They don't want to miss out. We will bring a huge fan base if you choose us again. You know, we are keeping great contact with all the, you know, bowl, the team leaders that were here, the coaches, the athletic directors, the football operations folks. We talk to them all year long. They all want to come back, which is a real testament to the awesome warmth of our environment, you know, landscape, but also the warmth of the people here in Tucson that take care of these teams when they arrive. And so, yeah, every year we, you know, get high marks, and that's what we're really, you know, working for. We don't cut corners there. We want to give this experience to these student athletes, and we want them to come back and say great things about Tucson in the future.
No, absolutely. Now, this year, game's going to be a little earlier. Normally, it occurs right around New Year's Eve, a couple plus or minus a day or two. So can you talk about when the game's going to be this year and how that's changing it for you and your team as far as ensuring that you're showing these players a good time?
Yeah, so our game is on December 27th, which means that the teams will arrive either on Christmas Eve or the 23rd. And our player party this year is on Christmas, you know, and so we're going to, you know, treat these young men to an awesome dinner and a really fun event that night. So, yeah, I mean, we're building it all around Christmas. It's going to be a fantastic week. We've got a gaming tournament that we're doing. We have our big tailgate. We've got player parties and Kids Day and Ladies Day. We just have so much going on that week all around Christmas.
Can you describe Kids Day a little bit so people understand what it is? Because this is for the Arizona Bowl. It's about giving back to this community.
Yeah. So for Kids Day particularly, that's when we bring all the kids associated with the teams. We take them out for a fun day and show them, you know, like a good time in Tucson. We have you know, sitters and people watching those kids. It also allows the women associated with the teams to go have a ladies' day at the same time, which is a lot of fun, includes wine and shopping. Yeah, but we're really excited. We're just about to announce, I'll break news with you right now. We're doing a great partnership with Dave & Buster's.
Breaking news. I love it.
And we're going to have a fantastic day at Dave & Buster's for about 1,000 kids. And so, during bowl week. So we're really excited about that. Just continue to develop these partnerships that want to give back to our community and help us support, you know, a lot of people.
And the players engage throughout the community as well.
Oh, yes. So we actually send players and the spirit squads to the children's hospitals to go meet with them and bring them toys. We have a football clinic that our players host and work for us. And so they're going to be working with over 300 kids at that clinic. We do, you know, people don't know this, but we do a whole STEAM event at the stadium for about 100 kids to show them all of the ways that science, technology, engineering, arts, and math can be seen in a stadium environment through the production, through the field maintenance, through the gym, through the physical therapy, through all of these ways that you can have a STEAM career while working in a stadium environment. Yeah, so we're doing a lot of things behind the scenes that people, probably our board members, sometimes don't even know about.
Well, that's true. When you said Kids Day, I thought you were talking about that when you went and visited the kids at the hospital. I didn't realize we were actually now putting on something for the kids who travel with the team, which is good because that's the only way you can get the ladies, the mothers, the coaches, or anybody to break away and get some time.
Yep.
The coaches are pretty focused, but everybody else, it definitely does that. So it's going to be I think there'll be a lot going on.
Oh,
yeah. And it will be a great time. Where can people find information about the game and where can they get tickets?
So you can go to our website, which is thearizonabowl.com, thearizonabowl.com. You can get tickets there. You can see all of the events. We're going to have a pregame performance that we just announced yesterday by Death Row Records.
Don't tease. Let's use that as the tease.
Okay.
If you're going to be able to announce it and tell us who it is.
Okay.
Let's wait till after the break. Because what I do want to get into, Kim, after this is not just a football game.
Right.
We've kind of talked about a lot of the activities that lead up to, but it's not just a football game. There are actually multiple football games and athletic things that occur as part of the Arizona Bowl. Mm-hmm. And it's much more. Pretty big tailgate.
Yeah.
Some pretty amazing things.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that when we come back.
Sounds good.
All right. That's Kim Adair, the executive director of the Arizona Bowl presented by Arizona Bowl presented by Gin and Juice by Dre and Snoop.
Got it.
Starts with Snoop, ends with Snoop.
That's right.
We'll be right back. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
James Chambers, a.k.a. Jimmy Cliff, lost him yesterday.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, executive.
I didn't know how much runway I had there before.
Yeah, I love that when you put it on. Go, okay, I don't know if I got the clean version or not. We better keep this thing rolling.
Right.
And Kim Adair, the executive director of the Arizona Bowl, was over there rocking out to it. It's the Gin and Juice song has obviously been played at multiple events and things going on. So this is, we've talked about, this is much more than just the game. I mean, the game's important, and we've been blessed with incredibly close games historically. You know, three overtime games?
I think so.
Three overtime games. I mean, it's, you know, Ollie Farhang jokes that he bribes the refs every day, every game with, get me into overtime. But they've come through three times. And we've had great finishes with great catches, great plays. They've been good football games.
Yeah.
But there's so much more to do leading up to and on that day and after that day. So what are the big things that make the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl, and they'll save the time on the rest of it, what it is?
Yeah, so, you know, we start off the day before. We do a big pep rally downtown. Both of the teams come with their bands, and we have some, you know, the athletic directors and presidents of the universities talking. But more importantly, we bring thousands of people downtown to eat and drink and shop while they're there. And the next day, before the game, we have a huge tailgate, the Gin and Juice tailgate. Gin and Juice builds a house on the tailgate mall. We're giving away
stuff. There may be a Snoop sighting at that house. There's rumors of it. There's always rumors of that, and so far, he didn't disappoint last year.
No, Snoop arrived last year and enjoyed that. And, you know, we have a cornhole tournament going on. We have our community festival out there. We've got the alumni associations and DJs. It's a huge, huge party that happens starting at 10 a.m. before the game.
An incredible collection of lowriders.
Oh, we've got lowriders.
They are some sharp looking. I mean, I had flashbacks to growing up in Southern California.
Yes.
It was incredible.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It is so much fun. And that's a free event for everybody from 10 to 2. And then you got to head over to the game, because at the game, I kind of teased this a little bit in the last segment, but we've got a pregame performance by Tonio Armani, who has a huge top 10 hit right now. And it's a country song, so it's really big with the line dancers, and we'll have some line dancers out there, but it's going to be really fun in the pregame. And then we've got, of course, our...
And will the pregame be in the stadium?
That is happening in the stadium.
Oh, outstanding.
Yeah, before our parachutists fly into the stadium with the flags and our national anthem and our flyover. It's a huge celebration before the game. And then we kick off, and it's going to be an incredible... We have so many fun things planned. Oh, Ted, I can't wait to show you. So many fun things planned throughout the game. So it's something for everybody, whether you're invested in watching the football game, whether you're invested in the music that we've got playing. We're bringing in a big DJ to help keep the energy level up at the game. We've got fun activations happening throughout the game. It's going to be incredible. And then the next day, we're going to host a couple of youth football games in the stadium. Specifically, we've got Snoop's Youth Football League Special Stars. So these are kids with challenges who play football, who are going to be playing in our stadium and have that whole big time experience in the stadium. And we've got also SYFL's best 8 youth team playing Tucson's best 8 youth team in the stadium. So that's going to be really fun.
That's going to be a big one. Have they decided who the Tucson team is yet?
We've got one being built right now.
Oh, putting one together.
Taking
some of the better players.
8-year-olds in town.
Well, you know his team from LA is going to be good. They're going to be put together.
They're always good.
And it's the game where you see those with the special needs that have the ability, just the love of football, the ability to play it. The game, it's all just great stuff.
Yeah.
But it doesn't stop then yet either.
No,
correct?
Because a few days later, I get some sleep. And then one of my favorite days of the year, my second favorite day of the year comes up, which is our Taco Bell New Year's Eve Downtown Bowl Bash. And this has its own reputation in itself. It's Tucson's only New Year's Eve celebration. We want the whole community to come downtown. We have a new location downtown at Hockamy Plaza, which is off of off of Pennington and Church, in front of the old courthouse there. If you're familiar with Dusk Festival, they kind of have that same footprint, but it's going to be huge. We've got live bands. We have lots of food and beverages. We've got a silent disco going on. We've got Taco Bell there and putting in a whole lot of things going on through Taco Bell. It's just going to be amazing. And then at midnight, we're going to all ring in the year together, followed by a fireworks show, which is courtesy of O'Reilly Chevrolet. And so it's just, you know, Tucson's Well, and I missed the most popular thing, which is our taco touchdown.
I was waiting for the taco touchdown to be mentioned.
Yes, the taco touchdown. Do you know, I had someone that just moved to Tucson, and they have some family coming in, and they're like, what are you doing for New Year's Eve? And they're like, we're going to go see the taco. It's its own.
So describe what happens with the taco.
Well, we have a crane that brings a taco, a huge taco, up, and then at midnight, instead of having your New York ball or whatever that is.
Yeah, who wants a shiny, sparkly ball when you can have a taco?
Yes, and we bring that taco down for a taco touchdown at midnight with the fireworks. It's extra special. You got to be there. And it's free.
Well, Kim, I wish we could package your enthusiasm, your excitement, year after year. I don't think you can get any more excited, and you do, because there's always something new, always something better. So let's listen for the announcements on December 7th of the teams. I think we got a good chance of having another incredible game, because there's some good teams being considered to come out, and I hope their fans come out in droves.
Yes.
Thank you for being with us today, and everybody,
TheArizonaBowl.com.
You can get information on the game. Support local.
That's right.
We'll be right back at the top of the hour, and you've got Matt and I for another 15-minute rant. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely behind the glass. As always, keeping this not only me on time and target, but keeping the show lively and entertaining. There's no doubt about it. Matt, I when you're reading the news and you start talking about more limitations that they're trying to put on Copper World and the mining down there. I mean, Mayor Tom Murphy, the town of Sarita, they're all supportive of it. They understand the economic development it's going to bring. Not to mention the fact that everybody who wants clean energy and wants other things. You can only find copper where you find it.
Right.
That's it. And we don't want to become reliant. We're already reliant pretty heavily on some rare earth minerals from some of our foreign adversaries, shall we say.
Sure.
I guess our foreign friends who could be our future foreign adversaries.
There you go.
There's so much to go for it. And Copper World is a perfect example of folks fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting. And now they're not happy with what they've got. They'd probably love to go back to the Rosemont proposal. Well, if they just accepted the Rosemont proposal in the first place, sure, the Copper World never would have happened.
Yeah. The thing that gets me about this story about the road that they have to take the heavy trucks to take the ore off the mountain is that, Copper World, Hudbay, whoever put down some sort of dust inhibiting material on the road. And they said that was a fairly good solution, that the town said, we've gotten very few complaints, or whoever the officials who are in charge of it says, we've gotten very few complaints since they put this dust inhibitor. But, nothing is ever good enough for Save the Scenic Santa Rita's, because face it, they just don't want to mine, period. I hear this all the time. Andres Cano, talked about him in the first hour. He was on Bill Buckmaster last week, and I listened to him. He's sitting right there, and he says, well, I'm not against mining. I'm a pro-mining guy, but I'm against this mine. It's always the case. They're always against,
to your point, Save the Scenic Santa Rita's will always be against anything down, sure, on that mountain range and beyond. And then the other one is the Center for Biological Diversity.
Again,
they're against anything that disturbs the ground. Mm-hmm. I understand their position, but they do it through lawyers. The Center for Biological Diversity is one of the largest lawyer employers in the state.
Wow.
If not the largest. So that's how they drag things in court. I-11 is a perfect example. I-11 in theory, is going to be the road that's going to connect from Nogales to Las Vegas. And actually, it goes all the way to the north end of Nevada, too, because it took Senator McCain and Senator Reid working together to get that designation of Nogales to the northern. It's the Canamex corridor, which you hear about all the time from a trade and business and economic discussion. The Center for Biological Diversity has sued over the segment that comes through where? Pima County. But it's put a hold on everything for I-11.
Yep.
The state legislature has put funding forward for the Tier 2 inspection for Wickenburg that connects down to about Casa Grande.
Yeah.
Nobody's opposed to that. There's no land disruption. There's nothing, but because they've held up the one by holding up the whole, and we're trying to get it broken, and it's actually broken into segments of independent utility. There's seven of them, and I've told many people, including a lot of the environmental folks who I've had conversations, because we have conversations. And I told them, listen, this isn't going to be built until you start screaming for it, and it'll never be built in my lifetime. The last segment that I think will be built will be the one through Pima County, the part of the state that doesn't have bypasses.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have anything other than I-10. I-10 shuts down, traffic comes to a halt. So yeah, it's one of those ones if you're either supportive or you're not, but you can't be against everything all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Have conversations, negotiations, but it's all or nothing.
Back to the road that connects the mine to where they need to take the ore. They said, well, we could pave it. That'll take care of the dust. Oh, no. Then now you get the biological diversity folks involved. Oh, no, that's going to kill all these animals by paving a 20-foot wide piece of road, a piece of asphalt through there. So they put you in a position kind of where, you can't win and you just got to litigate. But you're right. I mean, your point is valid. I mean, we talked about this a little bit, in our pre-show meeting, but if they'd have gone for Rosemont, it would have been...
Rosemont wouldn't have been visible from the town of Sarita,
right,
of where it was. Rosemont wouldn't have been visible from the highway that goes right next to it.
Right.
It was in a different place, but they used federal law lands, and the land that Copper World is now going to be built on is privately held.
Right, yeah.
It's privately held. They bought it.
It's managed by state, so you don't have federal officials that can stop it, like you did with Rosemont. So, you play your games and you win your prizes, and they went all in on stopping Rosemont. And then lo and behold, Hudbay finds out that Copper World is a better source of copper that's easier to get to.
It's at a lower depth in the ground, and it's purer copper.
Yeah.
So it's advantageous for everything. They may not have to send the copper somewhere to be refined in order to make it usable. So it can happen here. It's all internal.
Sure.
So, that's another one I'm reaching out. I'm trying to get Hudbay to come on the show. I know they want to come on, so hopefully they'll come in and give us their side of it. So last week we had Ted Cook on from who's former general manager. The CAP was nominated to be on the Bureau of Reclamation by President Trump. President Trump eventually withdrew that nomination by pressure from the upper basin states. But he is still on the board of the Water Infrastructure Financing Authority, WIFA. And he had teased with us last week that they were going to have a meeting where they were going to decide. And they've decided to put money. They've got about $400 million. They're going to put up to $75 million on the required reviews of 7 different projects. And the 7 projects include 3 desalinization plants that would be built in 1 in Mexico and 2, I believe, in California. And those would cost billions of dollars to construct. So this isn't about the construction. These are projects. They've also got a project that they're willing to fund in California that would reduce the farmland water losses, because a ton of water that's being done in some of the farming is lost. It's not used. It's not effective. It's kind of like pecan trees, 200 gallons for 200 acres. It takes a lot of water in some of these areas, and they think there's a study that can help that. 2 plants for treating wastewater to drinking water quality. That's something I've spoken about for a long time. And then a project to store surplus water runoff underground for future use.
Yeah.
And so these are all these projects will be built in, or do you think they're going to be built in? Mexico, California, Colorado, or Utah.
Mm-hmm.
All those folks benefit from the Colorado River Basin. So you ask, why are we doing that? Why is Arizona spending $400 million on these studies to do that? Because the agreements are all coming with trade-offs, and it will give, right now, Colorado's the biggest lower basin state for the Colorado River users. So they will be leaving more water and give Arizona more water off the Colorado River. There's some pros and cons to that, because one, it's the easiest transfer of water versus trying to build a pipeline. You know, a lot of people are thinking, are we going to build pipelines to bring water here?
Mm-hmm.
And
it costs $100 million to go 18 miles. So you need a bigger gauge pipe and a lot longer.
That's the whole thing about Mexico. You know, Mexico, we were talking, there's been desalinization plants on the Baja California Gulf down there all the time. But then you have to actually pipe the water uphill to get it back to Tucson.
Yes.
And how do you protect it? How do you keep people from potentially
sabotage
it. There's so many things. So the idea of doing the trade is the best routine. And that's where the biggest bang can happen for the buck due time.
And the last thing we'll talked about underwater storage, was that, is that akin to the recharge that we're doing here?
It's similar, but I think it's for, and that's, I believe that's being looked at up in the Colorado, Utah area where they can get some benefit from it. Because one of the things that everything's happening right now is there's other waters. They're taking water off the river to do this. And there's a couple projects, and all these projects, there's experts already behind. It's not like they're advertising to get people. They already have or groups and companies that are looking at doing this and believe it can be done. And this is for the final review that will literally lay out the cost, the true structure and everything else. There's some people saying, well, you don't need to spend all this money because they're already the experts. But the fact of the matter is the folks at WIFA said, this is what will lead us to the next step. And then, of course, then we've got to come up with the money to actually do the projects.
Right.
So it's,
I mean, you look at the CAP in the 60s and 70s, and this was like a $4 billion price tag back when $4 billion was a lot of money. And it took a lot of wrangling to get that thing done.
Yeah. Still paying it off.
Is that right?
Yeah. That's one of the reasons that the rates are driven. And that's why when less water comes down, the water costs more because one, we still have to collect the money to be able to make the repayment on it. I think it was a 50 year payoff. It was a long payoff. But it's also, remember, when the Colorado River water comes down the CAP, we're pumping it uphill from Phoenix to get
to
us.
It's an engineering. It's an amazing engineering feat.
And the utility costs and the what you do, they don't change significantly if you're pumping, 3 million gallons down or 10 million gallons down. It's still the electricity, the infrastructure, it all requires the maintenance and the upgrade. So hopefully, if we can get more water through that system, it actually lowers the cost of the water that the users at the end will be paying as well. So there's a lot of stuff going on. I'm glad that we saw WIFA actually get to the point of doing this because this was a $1 billion project that was funded by Governor Ducey. The legislature kept peeling away at it after he left office.
Yeah.
And it's down to about $400 million, but they found 7 projects that they can go forward. Ted Cook has offered to come back, so we'll probably pull him back after they make a little bit more to hear what he thinks about that.
Phoenix is not slow. Phoenix is still growing, and it's not slowing down. And, whether we like it or not, people are migrating towards the Sun Belt. And
why do we all live here?
We need water because And so it's, you just have to make those kinds of investments now. And I love desalination because, it's the water cycle. The water's already on the planet. Right. It becomes rain. It runs down to the ocean. It's all there. You get the whole water cycle. So desalinization to me is really the key or one of the important components to any sort of a water policy portfolio. And I love the idea of, Frank and Antonori and other people said, hey, let's make a nuclear power, build a nuclear power plant. And, the energy will help. The desalination plant run, and it can be energy for water. It'd be a good trade-off.
No, you hit the point right on the head. So we've got to move forward as the price of water increases, and the price of water has finally been given a price thanks to the drought contingency plan.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden the investment is possible.
Right.
So, all right, we're going to go to a break. And when we get back, we'll be joined by Jaime Molera from Molera Alvarez. And we're going to talk Arizona politics and where things are heading for our state as we're about to go into an election year cycle. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Just letting it run a little bit more. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, Matt Neely behind the glass. And we are joined now by Jaime Chamberlain, one of the founders and partners of Molera Alvarez. Jaime Molera. Now, I know you went to, I know you went to school with Jaime Chamberlain, but I don't think you expected to be introduced as Jaime Chamberlain.
I did not.
Okay.
I did not. So good morning, Ted.
Good morning, Jaime. So Jaime Molera, one of the founders and partners of Molera Alvarez, a governmental public affairs firm up in Phoenix. Full disclosure, he's our go-to guy here at 1030 Voice and at the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. So I appreciate all the help you've always been, Jaime, on this, and appreciate you joining me on short notice because of the cancellation. And I actually look forward to the conversation on what we can expect in 2026 in the political scene.
Oh, great. I'm happy to be on, as always.
All right. Well, I know one of the things you were going to do is just kind of start laying, you wanted to lay out some of the elections that we've got to look forward to. Mm-hmm. We've obviously, it's a non-presidential year, but in the state of Arizona, that's when we do all of our statewide elections, as well as the usual legislature positions and others. So where do you want to take it and how do you want to go?
Well, let's start with the congressional races, because Arizona is going to have two CD1, which is in North Phoenix, but also Congressional District 6, which is, of course, in southern Arizona, the Tucson area, which is going to be ground zero for the battle for the whether or not the Democrats or the Republicans control the House of Representatives. And we're going to see record amounts of money flowing into Arizona. It's going to be a lot of outside interest groups, both Democrat Party, Republican Party, but also groups like Club for Growth and Turning Point and Soros-backed organizations. I mean, we're going to see millions upon millions of dollars just for these two races. I think in southern Arizona, Juan Ciscomani, who's a formidable candidate, and that I think most people would say that they like his chances, but it's going to be a tight race. And I think the Democrats are going to do whatever they can. And they see this as an investment in Juana Mendoza to unseat him. So from that standpoint, Ted, I think that's going to be unprecedented of what we're going to see here.
And Jaime, do you have a rough estimate of how many really competitive districts there are going to be throughout the U.S.?
I don't. I don't have that in front of me, but I do know that it really comes down to just a handful of races.
Right.
I mean, if you think about it, here in our state, you know, those everything else is pretty much baked. But these are the two swing states in CD1, which is the North Phoenix. Republicans enjoy a 2.6% advantage in CD6, which is, of course, southern Arizona, Cochise County, the Pima area. Republicans enjoy a 2.3% advantage. So it's fairly tight. But those are some of the few, tight districts in the state.
And those, I mean, people don't understand. You say, 2.6%, but that's just the difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. That doesn't, count in the percentage of that district that's also independent. And, Congressman Ciscomani says all the time, we're a third, and a third. So, yes, between the third of Republicans and third of Democrats, he's got a 2.3% advantage. But then you add all the independents, and these really truly are toss-ups. And they've been held by Congressman Ciscomani in the last two terms and Congressman Schweikert for a long time up in CD1. Let's talk specifically about some of the CD1, because I guess I'm probably a more of a political geek, so I recognize some of these names. But with David Schweikert announcing that he's running for governor, and we'll talk about that maybe a little later too, that CD1 has literally been thrown wide open.
Correct. And that's why the Democrats, I think, are salivating. I mean, they would have run hard against Schweikert. However, Schweikert has proven to be a very, at least in that district, a formidable candidate. So him leaving, of course, the incumbency is always an advantage, but him leaving really does open the door. And you have three main Democrats or major Democrats. There's a bunch of others, but I would say the three strongest are going to be Amish Shah, who won the primary last time but ended up losing to Schweikert, Marlene Galan Woods, the widow of Grant Woods, our former Attorney General of Arizona, and another gentleman by the name of Rick McCartney, who's a political unknown, but from what I understand, has quite a bit of resources and can bring at least some good organization to bear, where he'll be a competitive candidate. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. On the Republican side, you have two major candidates, at least right now. There's a rumor that Mark Brnovich, our former attorney general, might still jump into the race. But Gina Sobota, who's the current state GOP chair, she had been able to get the endorsement of Trump, although I'll put that aside because there's been some rumors that it's not as strong or is not as real as she's touted it to be. And Joseph Chaplick, current very hard conservative from that area, who's in the state legislature right now.
Yeah, and that, those are some names I think people would recognize. Mark Brnovich obviously was very visible throughout the election, the last couple election cycles, and everything going on in the state with the concerns over election integrity. And he took some tough positions there. Gina Svoboda being the current chair, I guess I don't know if she's resigned yet or not, but the current chair of the Republican Party is saying I'm going to run for this too, and she's received some criticism for doing that, and she's all in. And then Joseph Chaplick's actually pretty well known up there, and he again, you've got three I think conservative candidates, and you made the comment about the Trump endorsement. Well, we've got multiple governor candidates that have been endorsed by the president, so you never know if that's going to change over time. But interesting enough, Grant Woods. Now, what was Grant's history? Was he Republican, then became a Democrat? Or
I can't remember if he actually switched to Democrat. I know he became an independent for sure.
Right.
But he definitely was when I knew him, he was a strong Republican. He had been a very strong ally of John McCain. But then late in his career, he had a split with the Republican Party. A lot of it was over McCain and the treatment of him.
Absolutely.
And then he ended up moving. He had been rumored that he was going to run for governor as an independent and possibly as a Democrat, but I'm not sure if he ever pulled the trigger.
So that really gives that Democrat race just a different flavor. It's
correct.
This district will be incredibly interesting to watch. The almost a total different things happen down here in CD6. I mean, there's one candidate from each party, and it looks like there were a couple Democrats, and they've dropped by the wayside. It looks like it's going to be Joanna Mendoza and Juan Ciscomani. And like you said, there is going to be a lot of money coming in down here.
Well, and they're both good candidates, or at least on paper. Juan has proven himself to be very adept. He's a very engaging, very charismatic. I think the Republicans see him as a shining star. If he can survive this cycle, I think he'll be talked about for a number of other types of things, maybe even the U.S. Senate seat. But he has a race this time, so he's got to win. And Joanna Mendoza, as you know, Ted, is, I think, with her military background, gives her a lot of credibility, especially in southern Arizona, where you have Fort Chuka and you have a lot of big military presence.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think it's going to be an interesting campaign, as always. It really is trying to find the heart and soul of CD6, because it's a 2.3% with about a third of the population being independent as well. So when we come back, Jaime, how about we jump into the state legislature and what activity they maybe have going on next year?
You bet.
All right. That's the voice of Jaime Malera, the founder and partner of Malera Alvarez, and we'll be right back after the bottom of the hour break. Stay with us. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice 5 days a week from 7 to 9. You can tune in, listen to five different hosts each day of the week. Lydia Rondon on Mondays, I Hold Down Tuesday, Grant Kruger with Food for Thought on Wednesdays, Tom Moulton, everything attractions going on in this region and this throughout the state on Thursdays, and then Ed Ackerley mixing business success and the wonder of the University of Arizona. So we appreciate you tuning in and listening to us, and my guest
Ted, can you indulge me for just 1 second?
Absolutely.
So we've got two pairs of tickets for the University of Arizona women's basketball game tonight.
Oh, outstanding.
The game's at 6:00. If you'd like to go, give me a call, 520-790-2040, 790-2040. Again, we got two pairs of tickets, so we'll take the first two callers.
And they're coming around. The new coach is putting a good name forward. It was the couple tough openings games, which were the exhibition games, but man, they've come together.
Absolutely.
It's a good party out at McHale when they're playing.
You see the new Cactus logo.
Yeah,
come on.
That is.
Right?
It's good and bright and green, and it's awesome. So two pairs of tickets, not one, two.
First two callers.
So keep trying to call.
790-2040. Thanks, Ted.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. Jaime Malera is from Malera Alvarez is with us today. We talked about the congressional races and that that are key. And but actually, before we jump into the statewide competitive races, how about talking about the statewide positions? I know there's some changes. We mentioned already three Republican candidates, and Katie Hobbs running for re-election in that race. Right. And then there's some other positions that our listeners may be interested that you may be able to provide some insight about.
Well, I definitely think it's going to be every race is going to be very competitive. I think you're going to see on the Republican side, you have Andy Biggs, a current congressman from the Mesa area, Karen Taylor Robeson, who's run before. She lost to Kerry Lake in the last go around. And as we mentioned, David Schweigert, the current congressman who's leaving Congress to run for governor. Now, out of those three, Ted, I would say that in my opinion, the advantage definitely would go to Andy Biggs for a couple of reasons. One is that he secured the endorsement of, as we mentioned, Donald Trump, but Trump had also endorsed Karen Taylor Robeson. But I think more importantly for Biggs, that he secured the endorsement of Turning Point. Turning Point, as you know, the Charlie Kirk's organization, I think, is very, very strong. They've amassed quite a bit of resources. They've made it very clear that Biggs's campaign is going to be one of their more important ones nationwide. So I would see him having a huge advantage because of that. And then on top of that, he also has Club for Growth, which is also very, very well-funded national entity that I think will come in. So the resources will be there for Biggs, both in the primary and then in the general.
So that the point I think you're making there is he's already got some dedicated followers that are not going to be swayed either by David Schweikert's entering the race or, you know, still contemplation with Karen Taylor Robeson. Do you think Schweikert hurts Karen more than Andy?
I do. Schweikert, you know, his area is the Scottsdale area. I think it's more the east side of Phoenix, what's called the Arcadia area, much more well-to-do. And I think those types of Republicans tend to be more fiscal conservatives, and I think it's more of a match for Karen Taylor Robeson. So, yes, I think his presence is more of a detriment to her, in my opinion, whereas I think Biggs has a very, very solid base in the East Valley. And I just think that foundation really gives him a leg up.
So one that I find interesting right now, too, just because of, I won't say the lack of interest, but just that there's already two names assigned to it, and I don't know if you're hearing anything. Adrian Fontes is going to run for re-election as Secretary of State. Obviously, that Secretary of State's the one that oversees and runs the elections in a large part, and so that gets a lot of attention. And Alex Coledon is the current state legislator. He's the current only Republican. Have you heard any rumor about anybody else entering that race?
I have not. And of all the races, I think Adrian is the most well-positioned, Secretary Fontes. And the reason is because Coledon is known to be almost like Mark Fincham, who ran for Secretary of State against Fontes the last go-around. Very, very extreme. He's part of the extreme wing of the Republican Party. I think he doesn't have as strong a base that would help him. I think Fontes has positioned himself well, particularly with the business community. So if it's those two, I think Fontes does have a strong advantage.
And then we get to the Attorney General's race.
Right.
Mays is running for re-election. And,
right.
And there's folks that love her and there's folks that despise her. So there seems to be several Republicans lining up to try to go against her.
And I think the knock on her is that she's been somewhat anti-business, you know, supporting a lot of the regulatory processes and lawsuits that a lot of fairly well-established business organizations and entities in Arizona have been very frustrated with. And so you have three, now you have three. Just recently, you have a gentleman by the name of Gary Roberg, who is one of Trump's attorneys on the election fiasco back in 20. But very prominent within Republican circles, doesn't have a big political name, doesn't have a big political background, but certainly will have resources, and he's going to tout the Trump connection, of course. And then you have Rodney Glassman, whom people might remember. He used to be a very liberal Democrat and councilman in Tucson, but now is a very conservative Republican in the Phoenix area. And lastly, Warren Peterson, who I think is probably the favorite as of right now. He's the current Senate president, Arizona State Senate president. And he's been raising a lot of money. He's done very well, and I think he'll be a fairly formidable. He certainly has the biggest name within the Republican circle of those three. So I could see a Peterson-Mays showdown.
Well, that should be interesting. I know Rodney Glassman is out hitting the radio waves loud and clear. He wants to come down here. We've had Warren Peterson on this show, so we'll probably bring Rodney down and give him his moment as well. And so it's going to be interesting to watch that. There's three other statewide races. I don't really want to go into all of them, although I do want to bring up one, and that's the Republican race for supervisor of public instruction, a position you held in the past.
Yes.
Very interesting. The current treasurer in the state, Kimberly Yee, has announced that she's going to run against the incumbent, Tom Horn, in that Republican primary. What are you hearing about how that's playing out?
Well, I think Yee is very popular. If you recall, in the last election cycle, she was the only Republican to win the statewide office.
And I think she got the most vote. Didn't she also get the most votes for any of anybody on the statewide ballot?
Of any candidate. And I should say the statewide office, aside from the Corporation Commission.
But, correct.
She is going to be very formidable. I think she's got a very good pedigree. I mean, she came from education policy circles. She was not only the education staffer in the state Senate, she then became the education advisor to Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger in California. So she had that position for many years. So I think she's very credible. She's also been elected. So she's got a lot of experience running campaigns. She was a state representative, also a state senator, and of course now the state treasurer. So she's got a lot of experience running campaigns, and she, in my opinion right now, she's probably going to be the favorite, even though Horn is the incumbent.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting race. And then obviously there's still so much about throughout the state about education funding, both public and the ESAs and the impacts those are having on each other. And so I think it's going to be an interesting race. It appears she's trying to tact a little bit even more conservative than Tom Horn, which is, I think, sometimes a tough thing to do. But we'll see where that goes. Real quick, before we go to the break, Jaime, everybody's always worried this, or not worried, everybody's always considering going into an election year. What's the chances of either one of the houses flipping?
I think it's fairly low. As I've been doing a couple of these presentations for different organizations, at least as of right now, Ted, I mean, we're not even in the first inning yet of the ball game.
Are you saying we're having this conversation too early?
No, it's always fun to have this conversation, but it's as of right now, I think that the high watermark for the Democrats will be 29 in the House. Right now, they have 27 members, so they might be able to gain two. And then in the Senate, they have 13 members. They might be able to gain one. So, and that's really because of just the dynamics and the makeup of the legislature and the redistricting, the way it's set up. The advantage is that you only have three races that are going to be competitive for the state Senate. And then there's really only six races that are going to be competitive for the state House of Representatives. So there's not a big margin that the Democrats have. And then the other thing that needs to be talked about for everything, where Republicans have been, even though it's a third, we talked about with the registration advantage, Republicans have done a much better job of registering Republicans. Right now, they continue to increase their advantage over Democrats. So they're going to start out with 333,000 more registered voters than the Democrats do. Now, the trick is to get them out to vote, right? In these non-presidential, it's hard to get that voter turnout. But when you start off with that large of an advantage, that really does help the Republican cause. even though I think Trump's numbers could have an impact and the state of the economy, all of those kinds of things are major factors. But the fact of the matter is, when you go down ticket, meaning, yeah, the congressional races are going to be mandates against Trump, right? That's what the Democrats are going to make it. Republicans are going to say, we need to keep these Congress people because they need to support the president. So that's really a mandate. But as you go down the ticket, it starts to get less so. And that's where that registration advantage plays well into the Republicans, because people tend to come home. They'll say, I might vote for Joanna Mendoza over Sisk-Amani. But as I go down, I really don't know as much about the House of Representatives in Arizona. So I'll just go back to my roots and vote Republican. So that's a trend that's very common. And that's why I think that factor is going to be a big advantage.
Yeah, especially when you look, like you mentioned, at the makeup of the state districts. There's you said there's only three and then six in the House. I'm going to assume a lot of those might be the ones that are in the same districts as the three Senate races, since there's two House members. But there's really only five districts in the state that line up to be competitive. And that definitely means right. Both parties have their known winning districts, and it's about those five. And so it's a tough one to switch either way. I mean, we're going to take a break right now. When we come back, I'd love to talk to you first about LD-17 race, because when I saw your slide you sent me on that one yesterday, I was actually surprised by what I saw. So that's our tease, and stay with us if you want to hear who may be running in LD-17 when we come back. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. Welcome back. You're listening to their Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Matt, thanks as always for keeping us rolling and on time and on target. Jaime Malera from Malera Alvarez, greatly appreciate you joining us always. The time has flown, and we've got about another little over five minutes. So I was surprised when you sent me the slides of your update of all the different districts in the state to see your LD-17 Senate watch.
Right. Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No. All yours.
No, I was going to say because of Vince Leach's resignation. You know, Vince, fairly popular senator. I think he had very strong support of the business community. He had beaten the prior incumbent, Justine Wadsack. And I think he would have been, had he decided to stay, I think he would have won easily. She probably wouldn't even run against him. The rumor was that she was going to go up to the Prescott area and run for the House of Representatives there. But once he retired, he was able to recruit, and I know a number of business organizations have supported Chris King, who's thrown his hat into the ring. And Wadsack has decided that she's going to come back and try her luck again to see if she can get her Senate seat back. So that's why it's a race, Ted, because if Wadsack were to win in the primary, then I think it gives the Democrats a much better chance, because she was known to be a very controversial, extreme candidate. So if I think, would say that she would be a target if she won. Now, if Chris King wins, I think the opposite. I think he would be very tough to beat, and particularly because the Republicans have an 8.3% advantage registration-wise, you could see why that would be a big difference.
And that's, for full disclosure, that is my district, and that is it is surprising, because it's always been a lot more competitive despite that 8.3 advantage. That's a big one. Correct. But I'm going to be honest. I had heard the same thing about Prescott, but then I heard that went down, and she was going to relocate to Gilbert and live up in that area. Unknown if she was going to run up there in the that district with Jake Hoffman and Neil Carter and others. But I had not heard that she was coming back to LD-17. So when I saw your slide, I went, okay, life got interesting down here.
Well, again, the number of consultants that I've talked to that are doing statewide races, that's been the more than rumor. That's been what folks have been hearing, that they've been organizing. She's been talking to folks, getting ready to do it. She might decide at the end of the day to pull the plug, but at least for right now, that's what we're hearing.
And on the other side of that district is you have the House race, one that, as you mentioned, Kevin Volk, he won last year in this as a single-shot Democrat, and he has now officially announced that he is going to come back and run again. And we have a couple of new candidates on the Republican side.
Correct. You have what I would call a Freedom Caucus, more of the MAGA-aligned Rachel Keschel, and John Winchester, from what I understand, has got already some support and endorsement from Speaker Montenegro. And the Speaker's Victory Fund has been very aggressive in raising money, so I think they're going to he'll be well-funded. Let's put it that way. So I think I would give him an advantage in the primary. And Volk, if being the only Democrat, I think certainly helps him in that district because they can single shoot, meaning that when you vote, you can vote for two people. So the Democrats in that district likely will just vote for him and not vote for the other candidate, whereas the Republicans might split their votes on how they do that.
No, absolutely. And it's still there's Kirk Fielder has also filed to run in LD-17. He ran last year earlier on a ticket with Vince Leach. And I'm still hearing rumors that there may be somebody that's going to jump in with the Democrats, which changes that whole dynamic. So that's going to be, I think LD-17 will remain a very interesting district to watch, especially with Vince Leach retiring and stepping aside.
And the Democrats, I think, are also trying to recruit a strong Senate candidate for the point that I made earlier, that if they have an opportunity, then you never know. They could sneak up and maybe take a seat away that the Republicans weren't expecting.
And the thing of Southern Arizona, the rest of the districts are pretty safe down here. Real quick question, over under 13 mm-hmm. propositions on the ballot. Just need to hear over under because we're almost out of time.
Under, and I would say I'd be remiss if I didn't say go Devils.
Oh, I knew you were going to slip that in. Oh, wow. We're going to close on that. Stay with us for tomorrow for Grant Kruger. He's going to have Leah Marquez Peterson. Jaime, thank you for being with us. And you've been listening
always a pleasure.
You've been listening to The Morning Voice on 10:30 a.m., your trusted local news and talk.